morning again to everyone. The court will resume the docket of this morning with case number 03-1153, a global emergency against Pierce Manufacturing. Mr. Anderson.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Sean Anderson, representing Global Emergency Vehicles. As the court is aware, there are, broadly speaking, two major areas of contention in this appeal. The first has to do with whether the district court properly exercised removal jurisdiction over this case, and the second has to do with the substantive reasons why the district court, in our view, erroneously granted summary judgment in favor of Pierce Manufacturing. On the jurisdictional side, quite briefly, Global's position is that Pierce, as the removing party, has not carried its burden of demonstrating that the amount in controversy in this case exceeds $75,000 as required for removal on the basis of diversity.
Now, have to agree with you that the controversy is about procedure as opposed to about the fate of the underlying dealership in order for you to prevail?
Well, Your Honor, I believe the court, in order for us to prevail on this issue, has to agree with us that the way that Pierce itself has structured the arbitration, and therefore the way that this litigation is structured, has not placed at issue the value of $75,000. The way Pierce has structured this dispute, whichever way the underlying arbitration turns out, nobody will owe anybody any money.
But the dealership is a valuable thing, even though it's not, a chunk of currency.
That's correct, Your Honor. And as argued in our briefs, Pierce has not cited to this court a single case where that's happened, where there has been no claim either in the underlying arbitration or in the litigation itself for, as you put it, a chunk of change. And yet, the court has found diversity jurisdiction sufficient for removal.
So if this arbitration were about who's going to own the Hope Diamond, you would say that it doesn't meet the $75,000 amount in controversy?
Your Honor, I would say that if it were structured in the way that Pierce has structured this this arbitration and thence this litigation, that's correct. Assuming if there are no further questions on the jurisdictional issue, I'd like to move on to the substance of the summary judgment grant and spend the remainder of our time this morning on that topic. The central issue with regard to the grant of summary judgment is whether the Illinois Motor Vehicle Franchise Act applies to the relationship, the business relationship between Pierce and Global. In a probably futile attempt to avoid tripping on my tongue, I'm going to refer to it as the Franchise Act this morning. In the briefs, it's often referred to as the MVFA. Global contends that the Franchise Act does apply to the relationship between the parties. Magistrate Judge Cudmore agreed with Global on that position, or at least agreed that Pierce, for purposes of summary judgment, had not established that the Franchise Act does not apply. Judge McDade, of course, disagreed, and Pierce received summary judgment solely on the ground that the Franchise Act does not govern the party's relationship. Now, Judge McDade's decision that the Franchise Act does not apply was entirely dependent upon his mistaken belief about the intent of the Illinois legislature in passing the Franchise Act.
Well, wasn't he also concerned, even if we agreed with you, that the Franchise Act is designed to protect dealers and people along the chain of distribution, I thought that Judge McDade finally got around to the point that the legislature has put this exception in the Act for vehicles equipped and used exclusively as a pumper, ladder truck, et cetera, but not a vehicle of the First Division type. And he was trying to make that meaningful because probably even the most enormous ladder truck you could imagine might have only one person in it, it makes it a fairly meaningless exception unless you try to draw some rational line.
Well, Your Honor, I would be the first to admit that this is a rather convoluted and not entirely for the purposes for which we're trying to use it today, meaning application of the Franchise Act, this is a very difficult statutory scheme to apply. You have to move to the vehicle code, and then you have to do the first division and the second division and all those sorts of things. I agree that Judge McDade was attempting to make sense of that difficult statutory scheme, but his view of the intent of the Franchise Act colored that attempt, and I think colored it in a very strong and prejudicial way for my client, because the question here that the court is ultimately trying to decide is not whether the Secretary of State of Illinois should have to require a given fire truck to be registered or not. The question that the court is asked to decide here today is whether the Illinois Motor Vehicle Franchise Act should protect a dealer in Illinois in fire trucks.
Well, let me
go ahead.
I just wanted to maybe recap what I think is the same question that Judge Wood had, which is, under your interpretation, doesn't the exception for first division vehicles nullify the fire apparatus exception?
No, Your Honor, it does not. First of all, the fire apparatus exception applies to vehicles broadly, not just motor vehicles. The first division and second division are specifically about motor vehicles. So a vehicle, a trailer of some sort, with fire equipment, fire apparatus on it, that is not itself a motor vehicle, that is towed, would be exempted from registration under that exemption, as would a piece of fire apparatus designed to carry more than 10 people.
Well, if you had a pumper or ladder truck designed to carry fewer than 10 people, would that fall within the fire apparatus exception?
It would not, Your Honor, because that vehicle, as stated in the statutory definition, is a first division vehicle. Now, Pierce has submitted to the court...
Even though it's clear that a pumper or a ladder truck, I mean, the only purpose for that kind of truck would be for fire.
To be used as fire apparatus.
Right.
That's correct. Global does not contend that it doesn't fall in the first part of the exception. Global contends that the clause that... In order to give meaning to the part of that exception that says, but not a vehicle of a type that would otherwise be subject to registration as a first division vehicle, that clause has to mean something, Your Honor. And in Pierce's interpretation, that clause doesn't mean anything.
What does the exception mean?
The exception, again, Your Honor, by the exception you mean the first part, the fire apparatus language. Again, it would apply to a piece of fire apparatus that is towed rather than itself a motor vehicle, and it would apply to a piece of fire apparatus designed to carry more than 10 persons.
Well, why would they refer to a ladder truck, rescue vehicle, searchlight truck if they're only being towed? I mean, that seems like a very strained reading, and the district court said, look, we can give the second part meaning too, because maybe the fire chief is following in his own car, or maybe they have a van that they've got, you know, a rescue team in that would be designed for the smaller number of people. It's quite easy to imagine fire department equipment that tends to be a smaller vehicle, but not these big, you know, fire trucks that every four-year-old kid likes to play with.
But, Your Honor, if it's just a car that the fire chief is following the fire truck in, then that doesn't fall within, that's not fire apparatus, that's just a car that's painted red.
Does Pierce make those vehicles?
Not to my knowledge, Your Honor.
So we're talking about what we 4-year-old kids and 60-year-old kids would call a fire truck.
That's correct, Your Honor. At least that's all that the record reflects.
I can ask you actually that about the record. Is there any evidence in the record of what percentage of the vehicles Global handles that, according to your definition at least, would be second division and what first division?
Your Honor, there's no testimony about the percentage. There is the affidavit that Pierce submitted of Mr. Olson that says that the vehicles that Global sells can be designed to carry from 2 to more than 10 people. So there are some of each. And again, Global's position here is that the way the Motor Vehicle Franchise Act is written, as long as Global sells, in the course of its business, some motor vehicles for purposes of the Franchise Act, then that act covers.
Is one enough?
If it's in the course of business, and I think you would certainly, if it were only one, you would have an issue about whether it was
in your course of business. In your view, who is the legislature trying to protect?
The legislature was trying to protect small dealerships in the state of Illinois against in-state or out-of-state manufacturers and distributors who had significant market power over them and could use that power to abuse them.
How large is your client's dealership territorially?
It covers just the state of Illinois, Your Honor.
So one dealership for the whole state?
That's correct.
I see.
That's correct.
So when you say designed, I could imagine a huge ladder truck that might have seating capacity for only two people. And so in that sense, designed for two people. But surely, it's fire apparatus. And it seems that the legislature must have had some purpose in mind to exempt the set of vehicles that can be described as major fire apparatus, whose principal use, I think that's one of the arguments your opponents were making in their supplemental authority, whose principal use is really for this apparatus, not for the carrying of people. I mean, obviously you have to have a driver, but that begins to make it meaningless too.
Well, Your Honor, you also have to have people to operate the fire equipment when you get there. And as Judge McDade actually found in dealing with the special mobile equipment exception, a central purpose of a fire truck, as opposed to a pump with some hoses attached that just sits still, is to get both the equipment and the people to operate it to the site of the fire. So I certainly wouldn't agree that a pumper truck or a ladder truck is not designed in large part to carry firefighters. I think it is. You mentioned the supplemental authority, and just this morning, because I just received the supplemental authority at the end of last week, Global has filed a response to that, in part contending that this was authority that was obviously available well before last week and should not be accepted by the court. But one of the points that the supplemental authority makes is that a vehicle is either a first division vehicle or a second division vehicle. There aren't any other divisions. And Global doesn't disagree with that. And I think it's worthwhile to look at the definition of second division vehicles and see if these fire trucks fall within the second division. Because if they don't, it makes it a great deal more likely that at least some of them are first division vehicles.
Why is that? And they might fall within neither.
Well,
that's also possible, right?
If you read the statute, Your Honor, the motor vehicles fall into two divisions, and only two divisions, and I don't think the statute contemplates any motor vehicles that aren't one or the other. It has to be either fish or fowl. The second division that refers to, applies to motor vehicles designed for carrying more than 10 persons. The Olson affidavit establishes that at least some of these trucks are not that way. Designed for or used for living quarters. Nobody suggests that that's an issue here. Designed for pulling or carrying freight, cargo, or implements of husbandry. Well, Pierce can't argue that. The Olson affidavit says that the vehicles are not designed or intended to be used primarily for the transportation of persons or property. So freight and cargo are property and are out the window. Nobody suggests that implements of husbandry has anything to do with this case. And then finally, second division vehicles are first division vehicles that have been remodeled to be used as second division vehicles, so that doesn't apply. So according to Global's own affidavit, these vehicles are not second division vehicles unless they're designed to carry more than 10 people. So again, if that exception to the exception about otherwise required to be registered as a first division vehicle is to mean anything, then it has to apply to these trucks, because otherwise, again, you have the fire chief's car, and arguably that's not in the exception in the first place. So it doesn't need an exception to the exception. And again, I would just emphasize, and I see I'm cutting into my rebuttal time, that the question at issue here is not whether this court is going to tell the Secretary of State how to go and register trucks in Illinois. The question here is that this registration scheme is used as a hook for a statute that is specifically designed to protect dealers. There's nothing in the statute that supports Judge McDade's view about quote-unquote consumer motor vehicles. And for that reason, in construing this difficult scheme, the court should err on the side of protecting Global, which is the dealer in this case, and finding that Pierce has not carried its burden to receive summary judgment on this issue. Thank you.
Mr. Anderson. We'll hear now from Mr. Christensen.
Good morning. May it please the court. It seems to me that on removal, the question is whether there's anything different between an attempt to enjoin an arbitration and a petition to compel arbitration, both of which were made in this case, but the petition to compel was made after the ruling on the remand motion. It would seem, and I would think the case would suggest, that those are mirror images of each other when on the jurisdictional question.
Mr. Christensen, I just have to comment, putting to one side the merits of the removal issue in this case, it seems a shame that this case is not in the state courts where it's presenting an issue of first impression under state law. It's going to be a one-way train ticket no matter what we do, because plainly the courts of Illinois are not bound by our own interpretation of this statute. So I just point that out to you in terms of one's ability to make innovative arguments and to get around language like, why isn't this a vehicle of the type which would otherwise be subject to registration as a vehicle of the First Division? The Supreme Court of Illinois is absolutely entitled to reconcile potentially conflicting statutory languages for all time, and we aren't. So I just make that comment. It's just too bad.
I don't know if you want a response to that, Judge Wood, but it...
Well, you have a right to be here, you have a right to be here. I don't question that, but...
To us, the issue was whether we would find a receptive court for arbitration as opposed to being in court for the determination of whether or not the statute would apply. And I think it, from my experience, is favorably addressed. Arbitration is encouraged, and the FAA is more frequently applied and broadly construed in federal court. That's the reason we did it.
What about how much evidence do we have in the record about the actual design of these trucks? How many of the trucks are, in fact, designed in a way that more than 10 firefighters are expected to be part of the passenger component of the truck, and how many trucks are designed in a way that 10 or fewer persons are expected to either sit on it or hang on the side or whatever firefighters do these days? Do we actually know that as an evidentiary matter, or are we just speculating about all of that?
We do not know that.
Isn't that an important fact to know as we're addressing this classification question?
No, because our argument is it doesn't matter whether the fire truck is designed to have 10 or more or 10 or fewer, because the legislature intended to exempt fire trucks.
But why did the legislature add the language in the fire apparatus exception itself that says, but not a vehicle of the type which would otherwise be subject to registration as a vehicle of the First Division? If they really wanted a fire apparatus exception, they would have put a period after the word fire apparatus, and yet they didn't.
Well, Upton Sinclair commented on how legislation is made.
I'm aware of that. I've actually been there, but we are courts, and we have to deal with the fact that there is no period after the word fire apparatus, or the phrase fire apparatus. You're asking us to disregard this last phrase, it seems to me, or at least you're trying to tell me it doesn't even matter the factual point how these vehicles are designed.
Well, I think that one of the vices of Global's reading of the statute is the word but, where they suggest that if it isn't one, then it can't be the other. And I think the more appropriate construction of the statute is to say, except for vehicles that would otherwise be subject to registration. So a vehicle which would fall within the exception could, under some circumstances, be caused to be registered if it were used for other purposes, if it were used, if it ceased the use as a fire apparatus at some point down the road. And for that reason, it's complicated by the fact that we are using the Motor Vehicle Registration Act to key into the MVFA, of course.
Well, right, we're stuck with that, right? That's what the legislature chose to do. And don't know, grammatically, as I look at this phrase, we're talking about an exception for vehicles that are functionally exclusively used for these various firefighting purposes. And then we have to say, but the exception doesn't apply to vehicles of a type which would otherwise, you know, that are first division vehicles. And, you know, once you work your way through the double negatives, you're back into coverage under the Motor Vehicle Franchise Act.
Unless those same vehicles might sometime be subject to registration and sometimes not.
But how do you deal with the word exclusively in the first part? The exception only applies to things that are exclusively used. The exception is the exception. It only applies to things that are exclusively used. Right?
If it's not exclusively used, then it might be subject to registration.
Well, I understand that, but you're not even in the first part of the exception if it's not exclusively used, because the exception only applies to vehicles equipped and used exclusively as a pumper, etc.
And the difficulty also is compounded by the fact that the word otherwise has to mean something. And otherwise, to me, suggests that the legislature was intending to say that there are circumstances under which the equipment might be required to be registered and sometimes not. It simply defies common sense to think that the legislature would have included all of the description of the various types of vehicles, the trucks that we know as fire trucks, and then say that we're going to either have towed searchlights or fire truck buses, as Mr. Anderson is suggesting, that would not be subject to registration. That doesn't make sense in view of the way this act came to be. Now, I have to apologize to the court, and I already did to my opponent, for the late submission of our supplemental authority. It was something we simply didn't find until preparing for oral argument. But the legislature, when first adopting Section 146, was far less complicated. It had only a couple of different clauses, and it reminds one of the way a farmhouse looks after it's been added on two or three times. It may not bear much resemblance to what originally had been intended. But the legislature in the subsequent enactments indicated that there were passenger cars and then there was everything else. And in view of that legislative intent demonstrated by the supplemental authority, it does seem to me, as construed by the Illinois Supreme Court in the People v. Light case, that we're dealing with passenger cars or cars that, or vehicles that are used as passenger cars and everything else. So I think that supplemental authority is persuasive in demonstrating that there has to be a practical construction of this statute that would, as the legislature intended, exempt fire trucks.
Mr. Christensen, one thing that has bothered me throughout this case and is whether the legislature at all intended that an industry such as your clients should be subject to the same arbitration procedures as it felt it needed to put retail dealers of automobiles under to protect them from the big three automakers. But you really haven't made an argument along those lines. Does the record tell us anything about your industry? Does the legislative history tell us anything about this Illinois scheme of arbitration, what the Illinois legislature might have thought the limits of it were to be?
There is nothing that we've been able to determine that would show that the legislature was concerned about abuses or disparity in economic bargaining power in the industry in which my client operates. The statutes that we are talking about originated in my home state in Wisconsin back in 1935 to rectify abuses that were going on in the automobile industry. I have not supplied to the court, and I have not been able to locate anything that would suggest that it was the exclusive concern of automobiles or trucks as opposed to fire trucks, which are a very specialized breed of cat. And that specialization is shown in part by the agreement that was involved in this case because, I'm sorry.
Let me put it right. Yes. Are you in the same industry as these other people?
No, we're not.
And do you have a record that substantiates that? I mean, you have wheels on your, on what you make, and they have wheels on what they make, but are they really in the same industry?
Well, they go to market in different ways, as is demonstrated by the agreement. And the agreement's the evidence that I can look to in this case. These sales are procured by bids to municipalities, and the dealer is only a dealer in name because they are in effect a manufacturer's representative, and the contract is between Pierce and the municipality that buys the vehicle. The dealer under the agreement is paid a commission in the amount of markup they are able to secure by the bid. And that seems to me to suggest that that's a different form of business model than the business model of the automobile and truck business.
But there's
that's
a lot of variation. There are lots of business models that are used in distribution, and I could imagine, you know, other specialized truck manufacturers, whether it's garbage trucks or whether it's oil tank trucks, or all of these might have somewhat different things. I can't see that as something that's going to help us figure out whether the Illinois legislature thought that dealers of these particular kinds of trucks, very specialized, of course, needed same protection as other vehicle dealers, different protection, you know. I just don't see it.
I'm not able to say, other than there are other legislatures who have specifically, unfortunately, in a more direct sense, exempted fire trucks from their regulation.
Are these trucks, these fire engines, are they basically standard models, or are they made to order for the particular municipality? What is the standard industry practice?
The industry practice is that they have standard models, but they also make them to spec. And if a fire department wants to have a pump of a different size, or if they want to have different hose capacity,
You don't have any idea what the breakdown is, though, as to standard model versus specialized. It used to be specialized in this industry, used to be huge, but I don't know whether that's true anymore.
I believe it to be, but there's certainly nothing in the record that would suggest it.
I see.
And that's why I'm concerned about the record from this other point of view. If this record showed that pumpers, ladder trucks, etc., are almost invariably designed to carry more than 10 people just because of the size of a crew that's necessary once you reach the site of the fire, and there was a de minimis number of this type of fire apparatus that fell within the first division, then I could see that the legislature had, in effect, exempted dealers, because maybe there's a de minimis exception, for all I know, under the Illinois Dealer, that's the Franchise Act. If the record shows, you know, that half of them are custom-made and they only carry a crew of 6 people, and the other half of them carry a large crew, it would seem a bit different. I'm just disturbed at my own lack of knowledge, anyway, about how the trucks break down.
Well, and that's the reason that I suggested, Judge Wood, that in our view, it doesn't matter. We're not dealing, again, to Judge Ripple's point, with an industry that has 5 automobile dealers in every small town. Pursuant to the court's question, this Global has the entire state of Illinois. So, insofar as we're trying to divine legislative intent, it may be that the smaller number of dealers can suggest why the legislature may not have thought that the problem was as great here. But I think we can also look to the fact that the Secretary of State affidavit should be at least instructive to the court as to how the administrative agencies of this state interpret the application of the registration requirement.
But don't we have to review the district judge's decision there on an abuse of discretion ground?
No, ma'am, I do not think so, for two reasons. Number one, it was curious to me that the judge, in looking at the magistrate's rejection of the affidavit, did it under 72A, when in fact this is a dispositive motion, and it ought to have been under 72B. And Judge McDade said, well, I think it should be given some weight. I'm not going to overturn the magistrate's decision as clearly erroneous, and in that, I think he was applying the wrong standard. Or one can argue that even if he were properly applying 72A, that it ought to have been disregarded, the magistrate's opinion was an issue of law because there should not have been a dispute about what the affidavit said. The affidavit was disregarded by the magistrate because it did not express an opinion about whether Pierce's fire trucks would be subject to registration. But it seems odd, nonsensical to me, that one would have to say that if they don't register fire trucks in the first place. Why would that person in the Secretary of State's office have to express an opinion about something they don't regulate any more than the regulation of medical examiners would express an opinion about John Doe doctor? So I think that helps us, and that the court below should have taken account of the Secretary of State's affidavit, or the person in the Secretary of State's office.
I just want to ask you a question regarding jurisdiction. How can we tell from just the value of the dealership, and I understand there's no dispute that it's valued at $4 million, what Global's losses flowing from a termination would be, or whether those losses would be more than $75,000?
I think that the fact that we have evidence that Global values it at $4 million, and that the agreement itself, ma'am, if I may finish the question, the agreement itself indicates there's no compensation to be paid by Pierce to the dealer upon cancellation. So that, to my mind, establishes the value in excess of $75,000. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Christensen. Mr. Anderson, you have a minute for rebuttal.
Thank you. Just briefly on the subject of the affidavit from the person in the Secretary of State's office, I believe that the argument that Mr. Christensen just made regarding 72A versus 72B, I don't recall seeing that in a brief in this court. I could be wrong about that, but I don't believe that's an argument that's been made before. The one thing substantively I would say about the affidavit, Pierce's own brief at page 22 says that Ms. McAfee's affidavit states that fire apparatus, and she described no exception, are treated by the Secretary of State as exempt from registration. By its own terms, the McAfee affidavit ignores the exception for vehicles that would otherwise be of a type, that are otherwise of the type to be registered as first division vehicles. Now, if she had said, we do something different with that exception, we'd have a different case. She didn't say that. She ignored it. And as he knows, court is under no obligation to defer to a state agency's interpretation of a statute that is contrary to the plain language of the statute. She ignored the exception, and you should not defer to that interpretation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. My thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under